This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Has there been like any events that have happened in the world and you've thought, hey, that's actually really interesting. I'm gonna take that and apply it to what I do in health and safety here for me and my job.
Now, what I think Lego have done phenomenally well as a product is provide the ability of creativity without being creative. You can build something, you are given every single step. It's designed for you. The bricks are made for you. The instructions are given and all you do is follow someone else's instructions. Yet at the end of it, you still feel like you've created something amazing. And people don't go, look at this product I bought from Lego. They go, look at this thing I built.
Without wanting to sound as deep as a paddling pool for a second here, I've got very little imagination at times. Can I create an abstract network of an interconnected management system for digitization? Oh my God, yeah, literally that comes to mind immediately. If you tell me, Pete, how can we use Lego to improve understanding of risk assessment subjectivity? And I'm just like, let me come back to you. Let's take five.
Yeah, but if you did see it for the first time, you'd be like, oh my God. But the value we got out of that, we saw in that area, instant improvement in fire door management, an instant improvement in communal space management. They don't do that training course anymore because of health and safety.
When we think about safety as being a traditionally really boring, kind of like maybe a stiff collar type of thing, a lot of people, despite kind of the circles that we sit in, where actually safety is a bit more progressive, actually for a lot of businesses, safety is still fairly cookie cutter. A lot of paperwork, a couple of toolbox talks with someone just standing in front of you, maybe giving out a couple of slides and stuff. That's kind of it. That is be all and end all the safety. But I know that obviously we're talking here about gamification, the engagement and creativity that comes with board games that can be used to share a message. I love that, but I don't think that's the norm just yet, James. And I think it's amazing that we're able to try out this type of stuff.
Good morning, Peter. Welcome back to the show. It's been actually ages since we've been on the podcast.
It really has.
We said about doing this topic that we were going to talk about today ages ago, and I've completely forgot everything that I was going to bring up.
So, don't worry, James. I've got some notes.
Kelsey Preece,
right? So, wanted to have a chat about inspiration, right? What inspires us in safety, but not necessarily the bog standard stuff, not necessarily the podcast, not necessarily the books, right? So, James, I've seen something on your wrist this morning that is quite new. Now, for those of you, obviously, who aren't watching this on YouTube, you can't see this, but James has got a new watch, right? It's a smartwatch. So, James, you mentioned a little bit before, what are you using it for?
My primary aim for this is, well, twofold. One is sleep monitoring so that I can be data informed. And two is to reduce me going on my phone. So I can get a notification and just look, is it anything important? No, it's not. Don't get my phone out. Because what I was finding is I get a notification, I just double check what it is in case it's, you know, a customer or employee or family or whatever. And I'm like, no, it's nothing important. It's just Discord or whatever. And then I find myself, I'm on LinkedIn then I go from LinkedIn to Instagram, then I'm on YouTube, and then I'm just like 2 hours.
Is a slippery slope, is that?
Yeah. So those two things are my main drivers.
Right. So my question for you, right, James, now, without wanting to divulge how old we are at the moment, right, I think both of us grew up on Star Trek.
Yes. Well, right, I was more Star Wars than I was Star Trek. I probably only recently got into Star Trek.
Oh my God, James, no way, right? So me, coming back from school, 6 o'clock, The Simpsons from 6 until 6:30 on BBC Two, followed by Star Trek, The Next Generation, right? And genuinely, growing up, there were two things I absolutely loved seeing in Star Trek, right? The first one, the replicator. Jean-Luc Picard walking into his captain's quarters and being like, tea, hot, Earl Grey.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes. That is it, right? And then the second one was actually the device that the medics used that was like the handheld one that would literally just scan you and it would tell you everything that's wrong. And I kind of thought, oh my God.
A tricorder or something.
Yeah, exactly. Literally, exactly that, right? And now, genuinely, the stuff of prospectively science fiction, right, back in what, the 90s, is pretty much a reality to some degree now. You've literally got, I don't know about your watch, James, but like it tells you your sleep pattern. Does it tell you your heart rate?
Yep.
You can get one
which I really enjoy.
your O2 sats type of stuff. Literally, they can tell you if you are having effectively a heart attack, right? Yeah. And it's genuinely, you're wearing it on your wrist. Absolutely incredible. We don't quite have something that you can shout it in, it'll materialize Earl Grey tea out of thin air, but we've got 3D printers. These 3D printers can create food. You can literally create a burger from a 3D printer. You can create houses. You can literally build anything. People build weapons from 3D printing plastic parts and metal parts now. Yeah. It's honestly unreal. And it is genuinely massively inspiring to think, oh my God, how has science fiction turned into science fact? And well, I'll be honest with you, James, where are we seeing this for safety? That's what I want to know.
Arthur C. Clarke said it, didn't he? Science fiction is but a precursor for fact or future or something like that. And he's what, one of the most pop, like biggest science fiction authors, I think.
Yeah.
But I mostly got that tagline from Thor.
Really?
Third Thor film, where they were talking about, like, because obviously Thor is like myth, but then it's real. And then in the film, they're like, but this is bullshit. And he said, Arthur C. Clarke, science fiction is a precursor for fact. And like, oh, for God's sake. And that's kind of what they've got. And then as you were saying that, I was like, well, that's kind of what we're talking about here. Like, granted, Back to the Future kind of got it a little bit wrong. They're supposed to have hoverboards by now. Kind of don't. A little bit disappointed by that, if I'm honest. But, you know, some of the shit that we have now, like... Like, do you? I'm really bad at maths, right? And many other things, but maths is, I really struggle with. I pretty much self diagnose myself with like dyscalculus or whatever, but everyone diagnoses themselves with something nowadays. But I can't do basic like times tables. I could just about get to about 12 on my threes. I can do my fives, that's about it, my twos. Tens, that's it, or 11s because they're really easy. Like, I can do that, anything else can't do. I can't do like just adding them, subtracting easy, like I'd have to use my feet. So when I go to the gym and they're like, oh, I just put like 60 kilos on the bar, one, I can't lift 60 kilos, so we're off to a bad start. But two, I'm standing there being like, right, the bar is 20 and then I've got a 10 on that side and a 10 on that side, and everyone else just like boom boom boom, and I'm just like, can't do it. And I remember my teacher at school, I'd always just use a calculator. She was like, you're not going to have a calculator in your pocket all the time. Well, I've got the world in my pocket now. Like, I literally pick up my phone and I find out anything. So the first thing I would probably think of is just the access to information that's so readily available.
Yeah.
I think it's changed the safety profession.
Oh, massively. Like, there's that whole thing where it's now less about what you know and more about, do you know where to look and do you know how to critically analyze the information that you find? Because as much as the internet is a beautiful place as a repository of information, oh my God, there's a lot of crap out there. Oh my God. And I know that we've kind of covered this before when we're talking about really important skills for safety professionals, but critical thinking has to be up there these days. It really does, because we're not, with the rise, for example, of ChatGPT, AI, all of that kind of, I'm going to call it a world of content created for you, your ability as the prompter or the prompt writer or the searcher has to be tip top when it comes down to analyzing and critically analyzing the data that you find. Otherwise, you're stuffed. Absolutely stuffed.
I do wonder though whether we lack imagination with a lot of this stuff.
Though, like... So on that bit, right, on imagination, what has there been like any events that have happened in the world and you've thought, hey, that's actually really interesting. I'm gonna take that and apply it to what I do in health and safety here for me and my job. Like, is there anything, any like real world event that you've kind of had the imagination to apply it to what you do? But just something that you've kind of seen and then you've taken and you've applied it that's been totally not to do with safety.
But it's probably not like a serious event or anything. I've taken quite a lot of like child games and board games and stuff and apply them.
Okay. Talk me through it.
So the first time I don't know if you can see it. Can you see? You see this little wooden thing here?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a board, like it's a wooden board that a friend of mine had like a laser cutter printer thing. So you basically just put sheets of wood in, and it will cut and do anything you want out of it, basically, within reason. So that is the first iteration of a fire evacuation board game that I made.
No way.
Yeah, yeah, which has evolved now, and it will be something in the future. And I'm not going to mention too much detail around what that is, but that's now changed and taken inspiration from a different type of board game. But yeah, I had this idea, and then I went around his house, and he like printed it out for me. There's like a load of bits that come off it, and it's huge. But it all stemmed from, when I worked in the NHS, we really struggled to do evacuation. So we were like the landlord of the building, and our customers were the trusts in the building, and they couldn't just evacuate, you know, Sheila, who's in a bed and just had a hip replacement or whatever. So we were like, well, how do we do it? And the way that the NHS or medical organizations have done it for a long time would be they would put like nurses or matrons or HCAs in the bed, and they would time the evacuation from the furthest point, and then they would basically make a calculation, basically like a mathematical assumption. But it didn't add for variety or dynamic nature of like things going wrong and stuff like that. So I just turned it into a board game and utilized the roll of the dice to implement like variety, and things going wrong.
That was really cool.
Yeah, so we're now I now got approval from a current customer that we have now test out version 2.0 on his site. So I'm quite looking forward to that, but I'll run you through that off air.
I just want to say, right, if your dice tower isn't like a fire station's training tower, I'll be very disappointed.
I pitched it to them, and they were like, oh my god, if this sounds amazing, we want to do it. And I was like, cool. And they were like, if this works, you could sell it with like your own branded dice. And I was like, don't like that.
Don't,
I
would tease me like that.
Freak out. But yeah, so like I've used a lot of games. So as you know, when we do like learning teams, hackathon, like Jenga is a really popular game that I think a lot of people use.
Yeah.
But we use Jenga, Buckaroo, Monkeys in a Tower, Lego, lots of Lego. Loads of shit. I take most of my inspiration of gamification and stuff like that.
I love that. Absolutely love that. Especially when we think about safety as being a traditionally really boring, kind of like maybe a stiff collar type of thing. A lot of people, despite kind of the circles that we sit in, where actually safety is a bit more progressive, actually for a lot of businesses, safety is still fairly cookie cutter. You know, it's kind of just a lot of paperwork, a couple of toolbox talks with someone just standing in front of you, maybe giving out a couple of slides and stuff. And that's kind of it. That is be all and end all the safety. And I know that obviously we're talking here about gamification, the engagement and creativity that comes with board games that can be used to share a message. I love that. But I don't think that's the norm just yet, James. And I think it's amazing that we're able to try out this type of stuff. I really do. I mean, on that
topic
of games...
It is difficult, though, isn't it? Well, go on, you go.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say, just on that topic of games for a second, there was one... I'm a massive video gamer, right? Some might say that I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes down to video games. I've pretty much been playing them my entire life. Now, there is a really popular game called World of Warcraft. And I don't know, I'm sure you've heard of World of Warcraft before.
Great game.
So for those of you who haven't, it's basically what's called an MMORPG, so a massive multiplayer online role-playing game. The idea being that you create your character, you level it up doing various activities, raids, dungeon trials, and all this and that type of stuff, and you kind of live in this world type of stuff. Back in 2005, James, I don't know if you heard about this, did you hear about the Corrupted Blood incident?
No.
Right, so bear in mind, this is like nearly 20 years old, right, at this point, which is A, a bit scary to think about, but B, a bit of a precursor to what we saw in 2019. So the idea is that there was a dungeon with a particular boss that would infect certain players with a virus. And what some players realise is that their pets would get infected by this virus as well. But if they put the pets back in the inventory so they weren't out in the world, and then relaunched their pets outside of this kind of dungeon, the effect of the virus would then spread everywhere that that pet had come out. So if you imagine, James, that you've got an infection that's transmissible from an animal to a person that has been released in a heavily populated area where people have no immunity to a particular disease, and it infects from one person to another very quickly, and there's nothing that you can do to protect yourselves against it. Does that sound very familiar?
No, I never heard of it. Never heard of it.
2005, this happened in. And literally, decimated cities. We're talking like hundreds of thousands of players in this video game affected by it, right? To the extent that the administrators of the game had to literally reset entire parts of the map to stop this from happening. Because what they realized as well is...
predicted a pandemic.
Right, genuinely. And when they took out the pets, what would happen in some cases is that like shopkeepers would get infected. But because of the rules of the game, the shopkeepers were immortal, so they couldn't die, but they still could be infected. So if you imagine you've kind of got this shopkeeper that's infected, but you don't realize it, and you as a free player are like, oh my God, I've escaped this. I've not seen any other player. And you go to the shopkeeper's infected, they can't die. And now they're literally reinfecting every single person that comes to see them. Right? It's
fucking mad.
2005, when I was in university in, this would have been 2011 or 2012, I think it was, I did a module in my environmental health degree on epidemiology and demography. And I used this corrupted blood incident as an example of, simulations, effectively, in the real world. Because you get don't get me wrong, you get a load of really good simulations these days that come out. Right, genuinely, computing power in 2024 is unreal.
Mm.
But actually, what simulations can't always be best at is predicting human behavior, because we as humans are pretty unpredictable at times. So there was a case where I think it was a football game that was closed to the public quite very shortly before it was due to start. And the managers of the stadium thought, right, well, everyone will just disperse. But actually, people didn't disperse. People actually crowded together outside of the stadium to continue watching the game on handheld devices. So actually, they didn't disperse. They didn't solve the problem. They just moved the problem elsewhere instead. And people were still getting infected around the time of COVID because of all of these people bunching together. And actually, what we can see from this World of Warcraft experience was what do people really do? And don't get me wrong, it's not like me physically in the world doing it. It's my avatar that's doing it type of stuff. But it's still a bit of a reflection on what human behavior could be like. Mm. So again, 2005, as an amazing, probably one of the only times it would ever happen, experiences of a natural pandemic happening within a video game to affect hundreds of thousands of people at the same time.
That's
loads of stuff to learn from that. Loads of stuff. Even now.
Wow. I didn't know that. I'm totally going to check that out. That's unbelievable.
It's genuinely... kind of
blown my mind a little bit. You could have sent probably you'd get laughed out of the world, wouldn't you? But imagine if Bojo was like, well, we're actually consulting the previous CEO or the current CEO of World of Warcraft because they've been through this. Everyone would be like, what the fuck are you doing? But they genuinely have. You've got everything there, right? You've got infrastructure in the get. Granted, it's based in medieval fantasy world, but if you put that to one side, you've got infrastructure. You've got critical services, e.g. your NPCs that have to carry on. So you've got critical services continuing on. You've got the chaotic nature of just humans because it's actual humans playing the game. So people just ignoring it and carrying on. People that are just so worried they're going to lose all their freaking hard-earned loot or whatever that they just hide their character out of the way. You've got people that, I don't know, purposely spread it, whatever.
Bad actors.
You've got all of this shit going on, which is just human nature, because we're all just weird, but probably exacerbated because everyone's kind of safe because it's in a game. So a little bit exacerbated maybe, but ultimately, if it, exaggeration is a good thing, you know, if it's exaggerated, then we can learn something from that exaggeration. But absolutely, the problem is, can you imagine a social media outcry? Like if Bojo went, or any, you know, like the International Health Organization was like, oh, we're currently consulting with World of Warcraft team to learn from their experience of when they had a pandemic in the game. I mean, I don't know how I would react. I think maybe part of me would laugh at them, but like,
as a member of the public, I'd think they're an absolute bloody idiots. It's a video game, right? If I was just a bog standard member of the public, I'd think that is wild. But knowing a bit about it, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a huge amount of sense. Huge amount of sense. So
so interesting, because we like sometimes I've not all the time, most of the time when we like pull the games out in workshops, like bear in mind, like we're doing workshops and learning teams and hackathons, whatever you want to call them nowadays, with like typically like working adults, like they're always like full grown adults, mix of like shop floor engineers to like corporate heads of directors of big companies and small companies. And then James is standing at the front and whips out a couple of baggies of Lego and is just like, right, I want you to do something with Lego. Like, you genuinely sometimes just get like, oh, what am I doing here? And then it's even worse when you whip out like monkeys in a barrel, or like well, actually mine is Darth Vader swords in a barrel, which is even better. When you whip out Buckaroo and everyone's just like, what the hell? Sometimes you have to kind of call the elephant in the room and just be like, look, you know, you all want to play it. So like, stop being grumpy. But like, there is this power of judgment and stuff, I think, stops us from exploring these out of bounds things like consulting World of Warcraft. And I don't get that very often. Normally everyone's just either a little bit awkward at first and we have to like get them going, but once they get into it they love it. But sometimes I have had one or two people be like, I'm not playing the fucking Lego, like I'm a grown man or a grown woman or whatever. Yeah, it's kind of similar in that do we allow ourselves to take inspiration, or even not just take inspiration but actually do shit? Like we talk about gamification, but do we allow ourselves to really gamificate work? Like, do we actually do it?
I don't think we do. And I reckon there's a lot of fear. Generally speaking, I think there's a lot of fear of wanting to try something new and then it failing.
Yeah.
And actually that fear of failure can very much stop progression. It really can. Mm. But I'd also say that there's times that I've done stuff before now that I look back on and I cringe a little bit because of just how, like I say, out there it was. But just maybe how different it was from what people have traditionally experienced. So I'll give you a quick example. Years ago, this is, again, coming back out of uni, this had been, 2014, 2015, right? And Hannah, my now wife, was going out to Costa Rica for 3 months to do volunteering. And as part of that, she had to go into various villages and little towns and then kind of support them through things like improving hand washing and improving hygiene and kind of teaching them how to do it. So I said, wow, okay. I mean, like, how did you do it? Like, what did you do? And she said, right, Pete, I got all of the kids in a circle and got a tennis ball out. And I covered the tennis ball in Vaseline. Yeah. And then I got another tennis ball out and it was just a normal tennis ball. So firstly, between it, we literally did an ice break and we throw the tennis ball to each other. And you catch the tennis ball and you say a fact about yourself or like what your name is, something really simple, right? And literally then you sort of pass the tennis ball around. And then when it gets back to you, you then say, right, okay, we're now going to talk about another thing. Just can be any topic. It could be like, what's your favorite food, right? And then the next time you ask a question, you throw the Vaseline-covered tennis ball. And the first person catches it and they go, ooh. And you say, well, what's, you know, throw it on. So they, you know, reluctantly throw it on. The next person catches it and they go, ooh. And then you literally carry on type of stuff. And everyone's kind of at sort of like three or four throws in, looking at the hands a bit, and you see the other person's about to get it the fifth time. The fifth person's like, I don't want that tennis ball. I don't know what's on that. It's gross. Right? So you then get the fourth person to throw you the tennis ball back. And you say, right, okay, now what we are going to do is we're going to pass the tennis ball around in a second. But we're going to talk about germs. because genuinely the first time you're throwing that tennis ball around, absolutely no issues. But the second time when you could feel the Vaseline on, that's the same as having germs on something that you're passing around. And if you're not, for example, washing your hands in between times where you might have picked up something dirty, or you might have been handling like raw meat or something like that, you might then inadvertently, like literally kind of infect yourself with something. So then she followed that up with proper hand washing techniques. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. I didn't really do anything with it at the time, but a couple of years later, I was in my first job in health and safety working at Hilton. And we had a global safety and security team day. And everyone had the opportunity to kind of pitch an idea. So, James, if you imagine you've got a room full of global health and safety professionals, including the new vice president of safety and security, who was a former FBI agent. And I didn't realize that he'd just joined the business. So at this point, I was like committed to trying out something, James. I was committed to trying an effective interactive toolbox talk to do with hand washing and a Vaseline covered tennis ball.
So genuinely, please tell me it went well.
I did it, right? And honestly, it went down well, but it went down with probably the most surprise I think I've ever seen from a group full of health and safety professionals, right? Because they literally, in their own words, this is crazy, Pete. We've never done anything like this before. Like, what is this? I said, we get it. We think it might be a bit too much kind of for now, but maybe in the future, what? Right? Really good.
That's so frustrating. Like, honestly, why for now? Like, what's the difference between now and later? Like, I just don't get it.
No, I get you. But for what it's worth, genuinely, at the time, I was like, I've got to do this. Like, I've built up that I'm going to do something in this meeting already. So I'm going to have to stick with it, right? But the nerves that I felt, oh my God, James, I thought I was going to have a heart attack, right? My palpitations literally thrown around this Vaseline-covered tennis ball, right?
That's great.
But then it was quite a good one because I used that exact same process when I did my level 3 teaching education certificate and then literally built that out into a lesson plan kind of more formally a couple of years later when I was doing that level 3 teaching education one. And it literally works really well as a toolbox talk. I've done it a number of times since. And honestly, I love it because it's different. It's memorable. Like there's that whole thing. You only remember what, like 10, 20% of what you see in a presentation. But I tell you what, 100% of people in that room remembered catching a Vaseline covered tennis ball. Right? I'll tell you that.
Because
it shocked them.
I think there's some science and I can't remember what it is or what it's called or whatever, but both using the hands to do something and learning / communicating something at the same time is like really powerful. I can't remember. I remember reading it somewhere. I can't remember what it was. So, but that's why I kind of use Lego a lot. So I haven't actually done more than just the Lego ducks for a while, but because it's not really come up for probably the last year or so, but we have at times used just a big pile of Lego to explore a problem. So
do you mind if I put you on the spot for a sec? Because I appreciate you've mentioned about the Lego duck, but what do you mean when you're talking about the Lego duck?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So we've got like, I don't know if I've got one around. No, I haven't. I don't. Oh, it's in the car. Oh, no, it's not. It's behind me. Here's one I made earlier. So basically we have, I'm not going to show you how to build the duck because that will spoil it for anyone that does come in the workshop. But essentially we have a little bag of Lego. If you're on YouTube, you can see it. And every bag, so everyone gets a bag of the same bricks. So they all have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pieces of Lego. And there'll be a picture of a normal animal duck on the slide, on the screen or whatever. And I will give them all the same bag of Lego and I will give the very vague instruction of build a duck. And that's it. And you'll get a couple of people look at me and they'll go, huh? And I say, depends. If I'm up north, I'll go, come on, you've got ducks up north. If I'm down south, I'll go, we've got ducks down south, haven't we? Like, I don't know, some shit joke like that. And that's it. And everyone just goes, and I'm like, look, don't overthink it. Just think about a duck and just start building duck. Like, just build. Yeah. Just put bricks on top of bricks. And just start doing it. And you get some really bad ducks. So you get a lot of really bad ducks. You get some good looks. But I tend to talk, once we get to the end of it, I will talk about, so I'll get everyone to hold up their ducks and I'll look around the room. Has anyone got the same ducks? I've only ever had the same duck in a room once, which is when two people copied each other. I've been doing the ducks thing for like, I don't know, about 7 years, I think.
Yeah. And I love it.
You get them told up and you say, has anyone got the same duck or a similar duck? And no one ever does. And even if they do, like, that doesn't ruin the exercise. It just makes it more interesting. But you're like, right, look around the room. Everyone's given the same resources, the same instruction, yet the outcome is different every single time. And then the conversation depends how on time. I normally tend to use this just as an icebreaker, but if I was to use this to explore it further, I would say, well, how could we fix something like that? And then I would say, then they go, oh, we'll give procedures. Okay, cool. We could give procedures. And for something like this, that would probably work really well because it's quite simple. But what we might lose is people's imagination and just ability to just build something themselves. So we lose like a lot of motivation in that when we look at like H. Pink's work and stuff like that, where people just get the pleasure out of it. What I think Lego have done phenomenally well as a product is provide the ability of creativity without being creative. You can build something, you are given every single step. It's designed for you. The bricks are made for you. The instructions are given and all you do is follow someone else's instructions. Yet at the end of it, you still feel like you've created something amazing. And people don't go, look at this product I brought from Lego. They go, look at this thing I built. And that's so interesting. Because when we talk about workplace, or if you look at H. Pink's work, like I'm saying, if we over proceduralize something, we take away people's autonomy and stuff like that and their creativity. But Lego have done exactly that. You have very little autonomy in Lego. Yeah. But if you're building a set, you have little autonomy. You have no autonomy. You do exactly as you're told, otherwise it won't work. But yet you still feel creative. It's phenomenal. Anyway, I went on a little bit of a tangent there, but we use the Lego ducks for talking about human variation and how we can all do stuff. And then like I have as well before had pre-boxed like sets of Lego, but I've ripped out some of the instructions or missed out words on the instructions and then gone and said, right, there's some instructions in this one, build them, except they've all got different instructions and it's all really messy and stuff. So they still fuck up. So then we go, okay, well, what's wrong there? Well, the instructions were shit. Right. Okay, cool. So there's, it's important that we have good instructions then, but the set's a little bit more complicated. So that's just two exercises. And then the one that I was going to talk about is I sometimes give them, they're just over there, they're too far away, but like a bag of just random bricks, no instructions, no nothing. And I might ask them to build their problem or build their frustration or build what they're trying to describe or even just build something that represents safety for me. Like if I'm saying like, I want you to define safety for me. And everyone's like, what do you mean? Like, oh, I'll tell you what, there's some Lego in the middle. Just build it. Build safety for me as a group. Just build it. And the stuff that they build and then they describe is so much more powerful than what you would tend to find in like the generic bullshit. They'll be like, well, the bridge represents this and the fence represents that. And then this person here represents this. And you just see it. And the difference is just unbelievable. I've got some pictures of a group that did it, but it was amazing.
Absolutely love
when
that.
We did the safety one. But I use Lego all the time.
I tell you what, I mean, we're talking about inspiration, right? And where we get inspiration from. But like you said before, inspiration goes hand in hand with imagination. And without wanting to sound a bit like kind of as deep as a paddling pool for a second here, I've got very little imagination at times. You tell me, can I create an abstract network of an interconnected management system for digitization? Oh my God, literally that comes to mind immediately. If you tell me, Pete, how can we use Lego to improve understanding of risk assessment subjectivity? And I'm just like, let me come back to you. Let's take five.
See, I'm the opposite. I mean, if you said to me, build a management, I'm like, fuck's sake. I can do it, but like it won't be as good as like Peter. If you said to me, use Lego to describe X, Y, I'd be like, I am fucking in here. Let's go.
Right. So here's my thing for you, right? As a safety professional, genuinely, especially earlier on in my career, I would have loved like a kit of like 5 icebreakers where literally like what you've described, here's how we use Lego for this. Literally here is a Lego and here's a step-by-step instruction as how you can use it. Because honestly, I kind of struggled when I was, especially when I was starting out, you know, you go to this like she advisor type stuff in a site and you get told, right, Pete, do some training on risk assessment. And I'm just there like, sure, I'll make a PowerPoint, right? Because that's what you do. You make a PowerPoint. What you're going to do is your icebreaker. I don't know, like talk about risk in real life, like crossing the road. You're doing a risk assessment then. But like that's fine. But I wish, James, that I had a kit like what you've described and just some instructions to being like, here's how you do it. Maybe like, I don't know, a video or something that would, because again, as a person that lacks imagination at times, seeing it on a YouTube video that I can just plonk down on a lunch break type stuff, that'd be unreal. That would be, I genuinely think that would have had such a profound impact on how I could have gamified training sessions, toolbox talks, especially early on in my career. Help, even later on in my career as well. That would have been unreal, like absolutely unreal. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I think as well, like when you were talking about risk assessment, so the other one I've done as well is I played poker to train people on risk assessments.
So oh, right, okay.
We just played a game of poker, Texas Hold'em. Basically, when you get the flop out, you get more information and you make a risk-based decision. And then when the river comes out, you get more information and you make a different risk-based decision. It's just a risk assessment. The information has changed. The risk is win or lose more. The risk benefit is win or lose more your money. How do you want to make that decision? And that is a risk assessment. So I've used poker as a
icebreaker. You make that sound so easy, right, as part of stuff. But I never would have thought about using a card game like poker to have talked about risk. But now that you've said it, I'm like, that makes it makes so much sense. So I would use there's a game called some people might have called it Shed or Shithead if you've played it. It's kind of like So three blinds, three face up and three in your hand. And then literally the idea is you get kind of cycle through all the cards and then kind of play your ups and play your blinds type of stuff, different types of magic card. But you can literally go through the same risk-based approach as you do. That's it. It's the same principle. But until you've literally just said about using Texas Hold'em then, I never would have thought about using the card game to describe risk. Oh my God, James.
What you need to think about as well, right? So when I can't remember who I was talking to on a podcast, but I was talking about a long time ago when we have kind of demonized people who are in safety that are kind of very process compliance driven people, right? It's not the sexy thing to do in safety now, like kind of the more like the stuff I enjoy, like more creativity, more like chaotic, more like. Yeah. Not people-centered, but all of the like human variation and stuff like that. That's the sexy stuff right now, right? But my stuff wasn't sexy when I started in safety. But what we shouldn't do is demonize one or the other, because like there's a reason why when you approached me to join the business, I was like, Pete is the opposite of me, and that's exactly what we need. Like we had someone who is like who just like looks at a fucking board game and is like, oh my God, we could use this. Like we'll never get anything done. We need someone that could, like you just said, you asked me to kind of put together a complex management system. I could do that. I can't do that. Like, so it's like each one is required in the profession, and it's different types of people. It's not as simple as putting them in buckets, if that makes sense. Like, oh, you're a compliance person. You're a creative person. It's not as simple as that, I don't think, but like to oversimplify. That's kind of what I mean. But like, I think that it's how our brains work. That's what makes us beautiful. Like I look at a game of Monopoly and I'm like, well, I could use that here and I could use that there. Like if you look at Monopoly is a great example. Monopoly is building an empire and then deciding what to do with that empire. But the building of it is basically building a business, right? So if you're trying to build empathy for the shop floor, to have empathy for the senior people of the business, put them in the game of Monopoly. And then put them in a position where they actually start heavy hand, like they start with the empire already built, and then say, right, now keep playing the game, but don't fucking lose it. Yeah. They won't take any risk. Like, you'll see it, and they'll be like, oh, I don't know what to do. And it's like, well, that's what your boss feels like. That's what the director of the business feels like. And vice versa, if you wanted to do it, you could use a different game. I don't know. You could use Monopoly, but start them as with nothing. And then that is like where the worker feels. They feel like they've got no control, and that you know, I don't know whether Monopoly would work in that sense, but ultimately there's so many things in games that we can use. That's probably why I take a lot of inspiration in my work is from the game.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, I see a lot of challenges with social media for a second, where we build our networks, we build our feeds based on people that are kind of like-minded toward us. You know, they're not going to say that we all create echo chambers as part of stuff, but algorithms don't necessarily promote diversity of thought. But I'll be honest with you, I can't think of anyone. I've got nearly 4,000 connections on LinkedIn, but I can't think of anyone that's ever put anything up about safety to do with like learning from Monopoly or actually how you can use Texas Hold'em or how you can use Lego. Don't get me wrong, it's all really great stuff, like process bits around like ISOs, about management systems, about digitization, automation, literally about everything to do with topical safety. But James, I cannot think of a single time when I've seen someone actually say, here's how you can apply relatable life experiences to talking about safety. And at the end of the day, Jesus Christ, isn't that what we're all supposed to be doing? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'll tell you what, if anyone's listening to this and you're like, actually, I know a so-and-so that puts out loads of content about real life experience applied to safety to make relatable conversations, let me know, please, because honestly, we're talking about this now, James. I can't think of a single person.
There is like an organization that does like Lego. So Lego Serious Play, where I started using Lego, it's from a notion of Lego Serious Play, which is an actual thing. So it's an actual branch off of Lego. Now, I'm not a Lego Serious Play facilitator, primarily because it costs about stupid amount of thousands of pounds to become a Lego Serious Play facilitator, and I'm tight as fuck, so I'm not gonna do that. But that does exist, but in the UK it seems to be very lacking. I think particularly in the UK, not all of us, but particularly in the UK, I think there's a bit of a stiff upper lip, like a bit of fear of judgment. If like I'm gonna, like you said, if I'm gonna walk in a room of directors and hand them a Vaseline covered tennis ball, I'm gonna get laughed out of the room. Yeah, you might. You might get laughed out of the room. But if you do, and that's the kind of way you want to work, then that's not right for you. So the business isn't right for you. So it's better to find out sooner rather than later. I don't know. And life's not as simple as that, right? We've got to pay bills and all. I get that, right? But I don't know. There's part of me that's like, just do it. Like, if we have more people in safety that just did shit, like, because I guarantee there is more people out there, Peter, that do have these crazy ideas. But they maybe just don't do them because they're a little bit like, well, that's not what everyone else is doing. Like, they're waiting for some academic to write a book or tell them that it's okay to do it. Like, I'm telling you now, if you've got a crazy idea, just fucking do it. Just do it. And it will probably go wrong. And here's a really good example, right? So I got a paid job to do a keynote for a company. And they were like, can you come in and talk about basically a load of boring shit? And I was like, right, okay, you want to talk about fire is one of your topics you want to talk about. Yeah, okay, fine. What if I set up like a dust explosion demo and I did that in front of everyone? And they were like, yeah, that's cool. And I was like, okay, cool. So I've got this little tin, right? I pretty much nailed it. I know exactly how to do this exercise. I've done it all the time in the kitchen. Maggie loves it. Like, I know exactly how to do it. I got to site and they were like, oh, I've had a little bit of a slight change of plan. Right. We can't do it inside. We have to do it outside. Right. I kind of come prepared for this. I've got like a shield, like a perspex cover in case I don't want anyone to die, basically hurt themselves and sue me. So I was like, okay, cool. I kind of got it. It was the windiest day we've ever experienced. I couldn't even get the candle to light. Like, it wouldn't. Where we were at the top of the hill, there was about 60 people standing watching, and I'm just standing there being, oh, sorry, guys, sorry. And I'm trying to get it. And literally a couple of people went, oh, that's literally the only reason I came to this thing, was to watch that dust explosion. And also, in hindsight, I think the tin was a bit too small for the amount of people there. So it fucking went, it went so bad, I offered the customer their money back. Everything else was fine. But just that bit went so bad, I offered the money back. It was, for me, it went so wrong. But you fucking tried it. Do you know what I mean? I had one wrong, but I've had 20 go so well. Like, just try it. I actually haven't done the dust explosion one since.
I'm seeing a YouTube video on rebranding safety coming up. Honestly, we need to, we've got to do a series of something like practical safety. And then it's literally like all of these bits, like the dust explosion one and how to set it up.
There's so much to do. I really want to do one where you get a mobile phone and if you whack it with a hatchet, that's basically a lithium battery fire. I'll show you how to do it.
Do you know, it's funny you say that. Like, so genuinely, I love torches. Honestly, Danny, you know I love torches, James, right? But this is an example of an 18650 battery, same batteries that you get in a vape, right? And I have to use unprotected batteries as part of this. So genuinely, if you put the battery as the negative part of the battery down onto the positive terminal, close the torch up, it will legitimately set on fire. Like, it legitimately will set on fire. That is, you have to be so careful with it. It is by design, because to do it that way, you end up, when you do it normally, you get an insanely powerful torch in a really small small size. So where I have kind of experiences of talking about then EV fighters, it's because I've ended up doing so much research in the past about different battery types because of torches. Because of torches. I'm literally having conversations with insurers about EV battery fires and the risk of sort of like thermal runaways and the potential risk of battery fires starting, how we can, for example, like resolve potential fires from disposable vapes as well, and how we can try and mitigate those risks. And the knowledge that I have, I'm no expert, but I tell you what, if it wasn't because of my love of torches, I wouldn't have half of the knowledge that I do about it. So genuinely, so much inspiration can come from so many different places, James. And
just try shit, like,
exactly. Take one message away from it. Try shit. I love that. Just do it.
The more you fuck around, the more you find out.
Just please do a risk assessment first if you are thinking about doing that dust explosion thing. But like, Risk Fluent takes no responsibility for or liability for anyone trying this. This is not formal advice.
We've already got that blurb at the beginning of the video now. But interestingly, right, we've got another meeting that me and you need to get to. But like,
no, we do.
I'll finish off on one thing. So we designed once in a housing association, basically, that we worked for, a training course that was putting our building managers in a building that's on fire. But it was in a very controlled environment. So it was at a fire service training center. And it was, they were watching us. We were surrounded by trained firefighters. Everyone had BA on. And basically, we were going to demonstrate why we maintain fire doors. So how smoke moves around the building, how fire moves around the building. Why we need to keep our communal areas clear, because for the fire service. So we got them to like rescue people, but like go through a corridor that basically had shit all over the floor, and there was people tripping over and stuff like that. And it was madness, very controlled, right? But if you did see it for the first time, you'd be like, oh my God. But the value we got out of that, we saw in that area an instant improvement in fire door management, an instant improvement in communal space management. They don't do that training course anymore because of health and safety.
Blimey.
It got shut down. Chiefs in the fire service and the people in the housing association was like, I don't like this. So they shut it down for health and safety. And we were doing it for fire safety, in so facto health and safety. And it got shut down. We risk assessed the shit out of it. Like, we were the safety team. Like, we weren't just going to put people in there. It would be a freaking brand nightmare for the business, let alone the safety team. So it was well managed, in our opinion, particularly if you were to do a risk-benefit analysis, like 100%, it was it was very well managed, shut down for safety. Like, and that's so frustrating because I don't think it was shut down for safety. I think it was shut down for a lack of risk appetite for insurance liability more than anything, but whatever. And it's just like, just cry it. Like, it got shut down. I've done the fucking dust explosion in front of 60 people, got embarrassed and drove home for 2 hours just like fucking feeling like shit. But like, there's so many more times that I have tried shit and it's just gone so well. Like, and it's just, and the Lego all came out of, like, there was always a first session where we used the ducks. There was always a first session where we used buckets of Lego. There was always a first session with Jenga, with Buckaroo, with freaking monkeys in a barrel, Darth Vader, swords in a barrel, whatever it is. All of that shit was done once for the first time and I was shitting myself.
Yeah.
But we use that stuff all the time now. And every time we do it, someone comes over and goes, what a great session. Like, I just never knew that you could have a safety training session like that. But unless you take that risk, you wouldn't ever get to that point.
I love that. That's advice for life. Your first one's never going to be good, but keep trying, keep iterating. It will get better.
Exactly.
You will get better.
There's so many lessons in that. We kind of didn't really talk about fiction much, but I definitely think we talked about like
inspiration for sure. I mean, I've got a little bit of a call to action for anyone that's listening to this as well. If you've enjoyed what you've heard about some of these different activities that we've done or that we actually still do at the moment, and you want to see a series of videos, a booklet, something on practical safety, activities to share safety information or to improve safety, let us know. Because honestly, if I'm hearing all this stuff, James, genuinely, I think I would have loved to have seen something like this, like in my career. I would have loved it because I just wouldn't have thought about doing it myself. I wouldn't have even known where to start. So if anyone's listening to this and you're like, I tell you what, I'd love to have seen that too. In fact, I'd still love to see it now. Let us know. Please do.
Okay. Yeah. Good call. Right. Thank you very much, everyone. We'll have to keep this one a little bit short. Unfortunately, we got back to our meetings and Pete was late because he was busy having a shower and doing it. So.
I actually was, yeah. Yeah, no, very true. Can't look this good normally, James. That's it.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.